Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished professional, a well-known author from Lyon, France, Céline Schellinger. Céline, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Hi, everyone.
Céline is an author, a consultant, a founder, and the founder of We Need Social. She's an author, and as all of you know, I'm very partial to authors. She's an author of a book titled Dare to Unlead, The Art of Relational Leadership in a Fragmented World, and which has been recognized by the Porchlight Business Book Awards in the US as the Leadership Book of the Year. And Céline has been recognized, felicitated several times. So Céline, before we start talking about We Need Social and your books, tell me about your own journey in brief.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Well, my journey brought me in different places of the map I see behind you. Mm-hmm. It started in France, where I was born and educated, and then I went to Asia to look for a first job and to expand my horizons. Mm-hmm. I landed in Vietnam, where I spent 4 years, mm-hmm. and then continued on with other opportunities in Asia that brought me to Southeast Asia and China. Mm-hmm. Overall, this Asia period of my career lasts about 10 years. And then I returned to Europe, settled in France, joined a large pharmaceutical company. I know you know vaccines quite well. It was a vaccine manufacturer, mm-hmm. With operations globally. Mm-hmm. And I was there in charge of international operations over mm-hmm. a number of different regions. And eventually this company sent me to the US, to mm-hmm. Boston, during 4 years from 2014, 15 to 18. Mm-hmm. That is the time I eventually left the company after 17 years, mm-hmm. returned to Europe, and founded my own business, We Need Social, so 4.5 years ago.
Amazing. And as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So let's talk about We Need Social. Tell me a little bit about what you do here.
So We Need Social is a one-person company, but founded after a long period of time when I started to were exploring new relational settings mm-hmm. in the corporate world mm-hmm. that deliver better results for the business and for the people. And I started that about 10, 12 years ago at my employer then. I founded a blog called We Need Social in 2013, where I started to explore, develop those ideas around relational leadership, engagement, leadership, and so on. Mm. And eventually that became, so this blog and this public speaking and awards, and eventually gave me the confidence to build my own firm. So it's working, I'm working on my own, but also a lot is as a network with mm-hmm. a network of partners. Mm-hmm. And I do consulting, I do bespoke work for companies, but I also do training and speaking, public speaking, you know, to bring those ideas into the world. And now that I have the book published, I do a lot of activities around the book, like workshops and that kind of things.
Mm, wonderful. So you specialize in engagement leadership or relational leadership. Help me understand this and give me an example.
Yes, with pleasure. So I believe that to succeed in our complex and fast-moving world, mm-hmm. companies need to engage their people, to mobilize their people, to have their people in action, taking action on anything novel, new, to innovating, etc. You cannot have just a few people at the top pulling everybody else into mm-hmm. the world. This mm-hmm. used to work, but it doesn't work anymore. So we need new ways that do not switch people off, that do not turn people into obedient servants of processes, mm-hmm. but instead generate excitement, enthusiasm, and willingness to step up, you know, and take the lead, a sort of entrepreneurial culture at scale, if you wish. And I give you an example of that. I'm working right now on a project where an insurance company wants to reinvent its corporate sponsorship program. They have noticed that the programs have a decreasing level of engagement, less and less people internally volunteer to contribute to those programs. And instead of having a few experts or leaders come up with new ideas, you know, changing this or that in the corporate sponsorship program, I'm inviting them to actually invite the whole staff in reinventing the program all together, so that the program is not just downloaded on them and they are like just the recipients, but they become the co-owners of the program. It changes everything when you have the whole, you know, staff, or at least a representative sample of the people, and not just the ones that you appoint, not just the ones that you have noticed, because they might, you know, resonate more with you than the others. The idea is to really embrace, engage, involve the diversity of people, to benefit from diversity of perspectives, and to create ownership at scale, and to benefit from people's own personal networks within the company, within the organization. So it's really about focusing on relationships and creating willingness to step up and be engaged.
Amazing, amazing. So then let's talk a little bit about leaders and leadership.
Yes,
since
we've
done so
much
work with them. Let me start by asking you, what makes a good leader, and are leaders made or are they born?
This is a wonderful question. Maybe the core question that triggered my whole engagement. It depends. My response is, it depends what you call a good leader.
Correct.
If a good leader is a self-assured individual who stands out thanks to his or her assertiveness or charisma, or then you will find just a few individuals, just a few leaders. But I think this model is outdated and toxic. It is toxic for our organization's performance. It is toxic for the people. It doesn't serve the planet. It doesn't serve. It doesn't match our challenges. Instead, if you think of leadership, as I do, as a collective capacity formed by the connection of a group informed by its own diversity, then leaders are everywhere, and leaders are any one of us. It is, but of course, this challenges traditional ways of doing, you know, where of even of being an executive. So I think this way is the collective understanding of leadership is, in my way, more productive and more fulfilling, and it can be learned. It can be learned by anyone, and this is what I'm helping.
What a great response. Thank you. So over the years that you have been working with leaders, what are some of the changing trends you have seen with leadership?
That's another great question, Ashutosh. I think I've seen a growing fatigue with traditional leadership. And not just, I mean, you can see that with, for example, the increasing rates of burnout, increasing rates of disengagement, missed business opportunities, innovation, companies falling down, the decreasing rate of productivity. I've seen this exhaustion, and even from the leaders themselves, you know, from the executives themselves, they say, we cannot go on like this. I cannot just, you know, pull my people and drag everybody. It's exhausting. I just can't do it anymore. And on the other side, I've seen an intense activity among scholars to reinvent, you know, new models, new processes, but they often remain intellectual processes or ideas, you know, in books, or implemented at the fringe of business by a few pioneers. And the challenge, I believe, is to reconcile the two theories, models, thinking, and practice and doing, you know. And that's, I think, a fantastic opportunity, at least for me, the one I believe I have, which because I'm coming from the field and I have developed new, or I have seen in action new ways of engaging people at scale that have been deepened by scholars and by reading books and listening to all sort of brilliant people. But I think it's in this interconnection that the opportunity resides.
Amazing. And my next question to you is, you know, what has happened in the last 3 years for affecting all of us in the world?
Yeah.
I've spoken to so many leaders and they've generally said that the last 3 years have been the most trying times for their leadership, because they've had to handle multiple things while maintaining bottom lines.
Yeah,
my question to you is, how has the pandemic impacted leadership?
I think first from a, maybe from a general perspective, the pandemic created a break in our habits. It has it took us out of our daily routine, and it made us take a more distant look on what we were doing previously without thinking. For example, going to the office. You know, we used to just go to the office to work, but then we realized we could work from elsewhere, and we got to think, you know, why am I going to the office exactly? Is it because I mean, is it serving me? Is it serving somebody? And why should I be in the office? Is it for my manager to control how I'm working? But then why would they control? What does it say? What does it mean about, you know, the way I am perceived in my organization? You know, what does it say about me as a leader, for example? What what's my job? Is it to control my people, or is it to, you know? So it has raised all those questions. And I think traditional leadership has also felt questioned by this this pandemic, of course. Many leaders have seen, have been amazed to see that their teams were capable of innovation, of reinventing the way they worked, almost without them telling. You know, and this is this has created some level of challenge. For example, if I'm not the source of collective work, what am I? You know, what am I here for as a leader? And on the other hand, you've seen leaders at loss when faced with the disengagement of their team, and realizing that or feeling that they needed to, you know, go and bring everybody, and they can't, they just can't wait for people to be back at work. But this also sends a message on their own leadership. How have they been able to create an engaged team that does not need to look at the leader for everything, right? How can you create a level of autonomy, of connected autonomy among your team, so that you are not needed for everything? You can, you know, take more time for strategy and vision and that kind of things, instead of babysitting people, right?
Correct. Well said. Yeah. Well said. The other question that I've often wondered about is that, you know, we are living in such a multicultural world.
Yeah.
And every culture seems to have its own norms of leadership. You know, there are some which are very dictatorial, some That's which true. Are very, very adjusting, yeah. accommodating. My question is, how does culture impact leadership?
So that's another great question. Thank you. I think culture does impact leadership very much, but it works both ways. Leadership can affect culture as well.
Well said.
If you start working in a different way with your team, wherever you are in an organization, at the very top, in the middle, it doesn't matter. You create ripples throughout you can create ripples throughout the organization that affect its culture, its DNA, and that make the system look at itself in a different way. So you can, wherever you are, impact the broader culture. If you do not pay attention to the culture, you will just reproduce it. through leadership.
Correct.
And that's a missed opportunity, I would say, because a lot of many leadership cultures need to evolve, and they rather than be perpetuated, I would say. One thing is, so how do you change a culture? This is very, it's not easy.
Correct.
And it certainly does not happen through a reorganization or by hiring different people.
Yeah.
It takes different conversations with different people. So who is not in the conversation right now? Who is, which topics are not discussed? You know, how is the organization thinking about itself? Does it discuss its past failures, for example? Does it learn from it? Is it a learning organization? You know, I used to work in an organization that never talked about its failures. It was taboo. You know, it was because it was a very political organization, so you would not dare, you know, challenging some senior executives who were in charge of this or that project. But then how can the organization learn? How can it evolve? It cannot. When you put things under the carpet, it just cannot evolve. And so that's a really important question. And one more thing in response to your question, which is very deep, I think, although we have very different cultures around the world, even within a single country, I believe that human aspirations have strong commonalities. And this is an opportunity for global companies in particular. You can tap into the universal desire from people to count, to be respected, to matter. People want to make a difference. They just they want to count. They want to be heard. They want to be seen, right? And this is universal across cultures. So if we tap into this this desire, this potential, if we are really authentic about, you know, bringing this and creating, making it an opportunity, then that creates there's a wide space for innovation and engagement in front of
amazing.
Us.
Amazing. So time for one more question on leadership before I move to your book. I wanted to ask you on technology. You know,
yes,
everyone is now talking technology and artificial intelligence and chatbots and what have you. I'd love to get your perspective on how is technology changing the leadership paradigm?
Yes, I believe it, technology is a huge opportunity for leadership because it precisely enables or it accelerates, it boosts the connection, which is at the heart of the leadership I advocate for, this relational leadership. So with technology, we have immense possibilities for connection, for greater, denser connections in all sorts of different ways. The issue is that technology also creates illusions. Illusions we need to be very wary of. For example, the illusion that we can replace humans for everything. We cannot.
Correct.
We need human ingenuity, we need human desire, we need human connections. This technology will never replace. And there's also the illusion that we can control humans. You know, we can almost shape humans as robots. And humans are very bad robots. We make mistakes, we forget things, we are happy, unhappy, etc. But this is precisely in this humanness that lies the biggest opportunities for our businesses.
Amazing. So now let me move to your book, Dare to Unlead, The Art of Relational Leadership in a Fragmented World. Before I ask you about the book, I'm assuming it's available on Amazon.
It is, yes.
So I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Celine Schellinger's book, Dare to Unlead, The Art of Relational Leadership in a Fragmented World. I will go and check it out myself. And now you tell me about your book and what was your hypothesis?
Oh, so this book sort of encompasses everything I've been through in my career, and then all the books I've read, the leadership. I wanted to create this canvas or to weave threads that have supported me and expanded my horizons into the field of leadership. And so it's a tapestry of my leadership experience, I would say. It refers to many, many leaders, scholars, theories, and so on, and all this weave together and really anchored in the real world of work, because my practice comes from the field. And I wanted to offer new ways to invent a new leadership, a new form of leadership that works with today's people in the face of today's challenges, with today's technology. And I believe there are three guiding principles that can help us reinvent a new form of leadership that works. The first way is a way of freedom, so injecting more freedom in the system rather than less. Right, cultivating the agency, the entrepreneurial spirit of people everywhere in the organization, and it starts with oneself, taking a distance from the system. The second principle is a principle of equality in diversity, enabling the system to connect to more of itself in its own diversity of perspective. And the third principle is a principle of fraternity. How do you create willful togetherness? How do you make people want to stick together as a group, as an organization, as a team, right? And all this is the condition of what I call engagement leadership or relational leadership, which is this collective understanding, the collective nature of leadership.
Wonderful. And what is behind the word unlead versus lead?
Yes. So that's it's a play on word, but it reflects pretty much what I think is in the nature of the question you ask about what a good leader is. I find this focus this emphasis we're putting on individual leadership, you know, you got to be a leader, more a leader, etc., read all these books and go through all those courses. I think this is part of the problem and not part of the solution. I think if we unlead, that means take a step back from this individual worship hero kind of, you know, worship of heroic figures, you know, we would be better off if we understood that people don't want to just follow a leader. This is passé. This is archaic. This is not serving us in the 21st century. But instead, people want to be involved, engaged, all connected all together. And that's why it takes stepping down a little bit from our leadership pedestal. But this is much more fulfilling from a business standpoint and human standpoint when you have the whole team become leader and become so much leaderly that they actually don't need, you know, to follow just a single person. Everyone can follow each other. And even I think we can drop this leader-follower model, which is very obsolete, well, in my opinion.
Well said. And my last question to you, Celine, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your own amazing journey and all the knowledge you have about leadership, what would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away?
I would say the first lesson is very pragmatic. You can reinvent your career at any age.
Yeah.
And that's what you've done too, right? The second is we all have a role to play in leadership.
Yeah.
Let's not wait for a leader, political leader, or business leader to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
We all have a role to play in leadership. And the third, my third message would be the name of my company. We need social. We need social connection. We need the social fabric. We need social networks in their positive forms as much as possible. We need this social trust among ourselves. We cannot live in a world of strong individuals only. We need this. We need to form a society. Otherwise, we will all fail together.
Well,
but I think there are better possibilities.
Absolutely. And on that note, Celine, and your three wonderful lessons, we can reinvent ourselves at any age. We all have a role to play actively in leadership. And the third one, we need social connections in their positive forms for us to live well. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey, about everything that you've done professionally. Thank you for talking to me about We Need Social. Thank you for telling me so many new things about leadership, engagement leadership, traditional leadership, and about leaders in general. Thank you for talking to me about your book, Dare to Unlead, The Art of Relational Leadership in a Fragmented World, and your three principles, which were so interesting: more freedom, equality and diversity, and fraternity. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
It was an honor. Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.